All right, we'll go ahead and get started. This is a tape history, volume one, tape number one of the Concho Valley Council Boy Scouts of America. I'm Frank Hilton, program director of the Concho Valley Council. This is August the 15th, 1978. Jack?
Stu, brother.
Stu?
Yeah, I've served in the council about 21 years. I started out as a Cub Master, PAC 32, and then I served as commissioner of the Cub Scout Roundtable and on the leadership training for the Cubs. Then I went into the scouting program and served as scoutmaster for several years, Troop 332 here in the district. And then also served as on the leadership training team and served as assistant post advisor 1 year. I don't remember the post number there. It's been too long ago, JB.
I'm JB Morris, and I came to West Texas in November of 1935, and I became scoutmaster of Troop 55, Texon. And in 1944, I became a scout professional, field scout executive, and first assignment Del Rio. And I was a professional in the Concho Valley Council 22 years. And 5 years out of New Mexico.
You've been retired how long now, Duke?
Well, I retired in 72, so I've been retired 6 years.
I'm J.T. Henderson. I was started scouting in this council in 1926. I was a scoutmaster for 41 years and also had a Girl Scout troop for 5 years.
Is that all you got to say?
Well, you was a charter member of Troop 2 now. Put that in there.
Well, that's right. Ralph and I fought when one of the merit badges was Indian fighting.
You're an Eagle Scout.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, you're modest tonight.
Well, I
Silver beaver.
He says his day's coming yet.
A few other things.
I'm Jack Scudder. I've been active in this council for about 18 years, served as a committee chairman, Cub PAC, Cub Master, troop committee chairman, been on the district committee, council board, and was council commissioner for several years. Had two boys that came up in this council and in the old Twin Mountain district. They were both Eagle Scouts, and both received their God and country. We're a scouting family. My wife was then mother for 6 years.
Ralph?
I'm Ralph Logan. Like JT, we joined Troop 2 in 1926. JT was my first assistant patrol leader. Cullen Cole was our scoutmaster back there for several years at the beginning of Troop 2.
What did he do?
Cullen Cole was a bicycle repairman and a general repairman. He could fix anything. He had a fix-it shop.
Including boys.
Yeah. Cullen knew a little bit about everything. He was the weather prognosticator around here for years, and his bicycle shop was on the alley behind his house, which was on College Avenue, and you could see up in the jail right from the back door of his shop there in the alley, and the jailbirds used to holler at us when we'd go down there to go to the bicycle shop. Old jail, it's been torn down now.
Are you an Eagle Scout?
I got my Eagle badge in 1927, I believe. Same time JT did, I guess.
No, you got yours before mine because Ralph was in the first bunch of Eagles that ever got theirs in this
present county.
Yeah, I was.
I've forgotten. I know Fort Blue Aaron, Dwight Hunter, and Jake Wardlow, Willard Crotty were in that first bunch of Eagle Scouts. We attended all the camps. Geronimo was the first camp. Cristobal, Pioneer, I believe, that out where Lake Nat is where it is now. We called it the 7 Mile Bridge. The third one was Kickapoo, wasn't it? Mm-hmm.
At, well, we had two at Geronimo, you mean?
Yeah. At, and two in the yeah. summer, the same summer one. The,
yeah.
Geronimo 1 and Geronimo 2. That was in 1926, I guess, our first year.
What else have you done in scouting?
Well, I was lifeguard for Campfire Girls King for several years as a scout.
Everyone envied him his job.
A lot of fun. Yeah, yeah. And,
weren't you on the council board?
And he was vice president of the council.
And yes, after the after I finished the university and started practicing law here, I was vice president of the council three or four or 5 years. And I guess I've been on the board since that time, my capacity or the other trustees. And been on the trustees of the Boy Scout Trust since its inception back in about 1960. I think 60 or 61 we set that up. No, before that, it was before Mr. Saul died. Maybe 57 or 58.
Well, that's good. We got one more guy to introduce himself.
I'm Raymond Pipkin, and I didn't grow up in this area. I grew up at Eastland in the Comanche Trail Council and the old Oil Belt Council up in there in Eastland and Brownwood. I went to camp the first time in 1929 at Camp Billy Gibbons at Mason, or Camp Martin at Mason, and then Camp Billy Gibbons later on at Richland Springs. But I became active in scouting in this council in 1956 through the Cub Scouts at Santa Rita. And eventually J.B. Morris led me down the trail to being the vice chairman of the Twin Mountain District, and then chairman of the Twin Mountain District, and chairman of the Health and Safety Committee for the district, and then the council. And finally, after Tom Hunter got tired of being president for 4 years, I was elected president for 2 years in 67 and 68. And my boys grew up in scouting, as Jack Scudder's did. I had three who were Eagles and received their God and country thanks to J.T. Henderson and his capable leadership and Troop 1. And I've always considered it a privilege to be a scout and a scouter. My father served as president of the council up in Eastland two different times, and it was my privilege to have that honor here.
Thank you. Let's go back now. I guess a good place to start would be with Troop 2. You two guys, John, tell us a little about the early part of this council when it first. It was organized in 26, and y'all apparently both got in scouting right after it was organized. What went on then? What were some of the activities in the camps and the funny things that happened? JT.
Well, I know that they used to. They really built it up because there was no little league ball or anything, and they used to meet down there at the old fire station, was where the Central National Bank is. And they had a grassy plot out to the side, and I never will forget, they had a big archway that had the 12 parts of the scout law on it. And I'll tell you what, I know that...
Is that down by the courthouse?
Across yes, from the old across from the courthouse.
Yeah.
And we used to meet down there, and I'll tell you what, you talk about enthusiasm. They had it because there was really nothing else for the kids to do. And, we went to camp, and I'll never forget, there's a prize picture down at the Standard Times that needs to be put in these things. One of our first commissioners, Mr. Schubert, we were having a retreat, and he was standing saluting, but he had his thumb extended out from his hand, and just as they took his picture, they caught him, he turned his head, and he looks like he's thumbing his nose at the flag, which is...
As long as he was in scouting,
that's
he
right.
always saluted with all
that's
his
right.
life.
And while we're on, there's another one that we might think about. It's Sam.
Yeah, Schubert. Sam Schubert.
Yeah. But we had the usual amount of rain and awful poor food. You remember Old Man Van?
Geronimo, and then he went to Pioneer.
Right.
What was his job? Was he cook?
He was cook. And the kids didn't like his food, and he didn't like the kids. And it was a running feud, you know, all the time. But we had some, of course, I think water sports were real good. We played water polo out at Cristobal, and I nearly got drowned because I thought I was a pretty good swimmer, but they'd grab your trunks and pull you under. Of course, that was back in the days when you had bathing suits, you didn't have trunks. But Camp Connolly, as I was telling Frank, was a camp that we were absolutely cut off from anybody for about 3 days.
And where was Connolly?
It was up at Carlsbad, Texas. And I think we ate ice cream for 2 days.
Where is Carlsbad?
Mr. C.U. Connolly from my hometown of Eastland owned that ranch up there.
Is that
where the sanatorium is now located.
Well, now
he owned several thousand acres of it, and he let the scouts use that as a camp, but eventually he gave some of that land to what is now this, what has been the sanatorium up there.
We were on the west side of the river, and of course there were no helicopters in those days.
What river was that?
This is North Concho. And I can see the guys in Troop 7, they camped on what had been an island right out in the middle of the lake, and they were completely surrounded. I can see this, I can look, old Bomber Hart and them coming across there in this canoe. But then we had a good camp down at Camp Kickapoo, except that the ticks were pretty bad. And
where was Camp Kickapoo?
No, it was down, east of Menard, wasn't it?
Yeah.
About Peg Leg.
15 or 20 miles.
All those springs.
Right below Hicks, you remember? Yeah. We used to walk across and walk about a mile up there to Hicks.
But they, it was a real good camp, except that someone, and I always think it must have been Bryce Draper, the scout executive, started this rumor that there was some kind of monster wandering around in camp. And at night, each troop during the camp used to have guard duty. And I know this kid, Gordon Buttery, who later on was one of the participants in this contest or whatever they were having, where they were to choose a scout, you know, to go to the Antarctic. And he was the one that was chosen. But anyway, he and I had guard duty one night, and we had been in the latrine, and when we came out, we saw this huge white thing standing over about 30 yards away. And all we had was an old kerosene lantern with a black chimney on the thing. And we'd look at that thing, and I thought to myself, if we could just get out the latrine, but there was no way to go. But finally, we stood there, and the thing would get taller, and it would go back down. And finally, it had moved close enough, we could hear it. It was a horse grazing, and it would raise its head. And Ralph remembers this. You remember they used to give belt honors at camp?
Yeah.
It had little deals that they stenciled on your belt. And I never will forget one that I prized very highly. It showed a white fish. And each morning you'd get up and run a mile and then go swimming. And of course, I wouldn't do it now if they gave me a gold watch. But I mean, back in those days. And if you participated in a campfire program, you got a little campfire stenciled on your belt. And also, if your tent went inspected, you know, they stenciled a tent. But
wasn't Clapp and his troop down there at Kickapoo
right.
The first time? They were experts in fire building. Clapp knew all about all kinds of snakes and insects. And it was an entire troop of specialists. One patrol was signaling patrol, one was fire building, one was first aid, another one pioneer building bridges and whatnot.
Can you all do something for me? Can you date these camps you're talking about? You're back before
from
my 26 knowledge.
From 26 to 30, Camp Connolly was in 30. The rest of them were in the...
Kickapoo would have been in 28, I believe. Pioneer was the second camp, the second year that we were scouts.
Well, I heard Marshal Jones tell Jack Moore at Rotary Club Friday that Pioneer Camp was the first camp.
Mm-hmm. No,
I didn't know it.
That was the first one Marshal made because he's about a year or 2 years.
Just a kid, huh?
Yeah.
So, first one John made, too, because they're the same age.
These camps didn't have any improvements in them, did they?
No, they were...
Did they have a water well?
No.
No.
What'd y'all do for water and for food and for shelter?
Well, now, I can't remember. That's been too long. But there were no wells, and I know that the dining hall was usually just built with posts with, you know, sheet iron roof, and there was a cook tent that was... that was all there was, because I know the first camp I went on, I was supposed to be on KP, and I went up, and I had got very, very homesick. And I went up, and our milkman had brought the milk out to camp. So I said, Pete, are you going back into town? He said, I said, could I have a ride with you? Yeah. I just left. Didn't tell a soul I was left. They were getting ready to drag the river from me. Finally, Bryce Draper called, and I answered the phone. What in the... blank blazers are you doing in there? I said, oh, my grandmother needed me. He said, did you know that we've had everybody getting ready to drag the river for you? But, you know, it was...
Well, y'all were around when they had Scout Village.
Oh, yes.
Down on the river. Yeah. Tell me something about that. I heard the Scout executive lived there and everything. What was this anyway?
That's right. Bob Billington lived there. In fact, Bob Billington was at my troop court of honor at Texon the night that the water got up in the scout office and their living quarters, and his wife called him out there in Texon and told him what had happened.
Well, what was this village? Where was it?
Right down there, built right almost on where your place is.
On the River Drive there.
In Santa Fe Park.
Right, north below
where the YMCA is in that the two ballparks.
If you'll look right across the river, there's still the concrete foundation where we swam. It's on the down almost back of the Girl Scout, and then over on back of the Girl Scout property, there's this big concrete slab that has an iron eye in it. Now that's where the swinging bridge was that went across the river. But it was
dead man.
Yeah, that's right. Several people have been drowned off.
Nothing except just happened to be a deep hole of water and a nice. Rock ledge over there, you can see it from the park across there. That was Dead Man's Hole.
Well, there were several cabins down there too.
Oh yes, they built these cabins, the Carpenters Union and everybody built them and pretty well got them, you know, up. But most of the kids went down and helped finish them up inside, and they were framed, but they had got these slabs of logs, which made them look just like a log cabin. But they had tennis courts, basketball.
That was built in about 1928 or 29.
When was the flood?
36.
That's when it was all washed away. Yeah.
There were 8 cabins, I believe, down there. There was one for each. It was 6 troops, and that was all we had here in town at that time. Oh, we had a troop 7. Didn't have a 6 at
that early time. Troop 5 was sponsored by the Standard Times. Now, a lot of people don't know that.
And they had one that was the Zolka Cabin, which was a Star Scout organization that Bryce Draper developed.
Well, what was it? I know they didn't have Auto the Arrow here then.
Well, they had the Cunier. John, Ralph, you were in Cunier.
Tell us something about those. The Zolkers and the Cuniers, what is all
that? Well, the Zolkers was a purely local organization. It was a brainchild of Bryce Draper's to hold some of us senior scouts in the scouting program. And it had a set of rules, constitution, that provided that you had to be a Star Scout and be elected a member. It went on for 30 years.
What'd y'all do?
Finally got to, it was social more than anything else. We'd have dances, and then we would referee and judge at the scout jamborees and whatnot. And we stayed connected fairly close with scouting, but we had a lot of activities that were not scouting, drinking homebrew.
Well, now, Ralph, weren't most of the kids that went to that 32 Olympics, weren't those kids Zokas that went from here on? Most of them were, weren't they? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't go. I couldn't. I was in junior college, and it was a part of the depression. Dad told me if I took off and left the farm out here, I wasn't going to college that fall, so I didn't go.
Well, what was the other group?
The Cunier was, I guess, the forerunner of the Order of the Arrow. It was an honors program, and it was a very similar thing to the Order of the Arrow. Yeah. I know I was tapped out for Cunier at Camp Bennett Gibbons in 1933, I believe it was, and it was at the sound of the ram's horn, and I do remember very distinctly my initiation that night. We were around a very small campfire on a ledge on a mountain on the side of a hill down there, and a rattlesnake came crawling out from underneath the rocks where we were, and it like to broke us up.
Well, did we have it here in this council?
Oh, yes, John. You and John and I were all tapped out at the same time down at camp.
Well, what can y'all tell us about it?
Well, it was a lot like the Order of the Arrow.
Well,
you know, they got us around the fire and read us all the stuff like they do, and seemed like to me you were marked with a black diamond up on your forehead. And I know, boy, when you'd come going and swaggering into camp after staying out all night, you felt like you were, you know, the head honcho. But it was based on Indian lore. They did lots of Indian dancing.
Leadership,
right?
They had a patch.
Yeah.
I've never seen the patch.
I can't remember.
In the Comanche Trail Council, I know that each one was required to build his own arrow, feather it, paint it his own colors, and place it in the quiver of the membership.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But well, of course, the Order of the Arrow was in existence at the same time. But this, they didn't have Order of the Arrow here.
We didn't have lodge.
No,
they had it in the Brownwood Council.
Yeah.
According to the best records I can get, Order of the Arrow started here either 1936 or 1939. I'm not sure which year. Prior to World War II, and I don't know how active, but I do know I've seen some old rosters that everybody had an Indian name that was in the Order of the Arrow. I guess it was small enough that they could do that.
When they used to have the tap-out ceremony, see, I was tapped out after I was a leader, and you went out and spent the night, and you had to keep the fire going all night in the OA. And then the next day, after you went through all these chores, and ours was grubbing stumps out of the council ring at Lewis Farr in August, you got to eat, and then you went back on silence, and they took you in and asked you your vows, and we're supposed to vow, you know, to live a better life, but also they would ask you at night when you were sitting there by yourself, what impressed you most, and I know that. I think the funniest thing, and I think if they kicked me out, I'd have had to laugh. We were sitting there, and there were about five or six of us, because they had really concentrated on us. They had about 34 OA members and five of us, two adults, the rest of them were kids. Most of the boys were kids that had been on camp staff, you know, and couldn't participate in the OA because the OA, you know, used to be held down at camp, the ceremony did, while camp was going on. But anyway, I was sitting there cross-legged, and they had us blindfolded, and they'd come in, and you could hear these Indians, and they'd come, and they'd stop, and then they'd just yank these kids to their feet, take them in there, and ask them what their vows were. And I was sitting about 20 feet away, and they asked this one kid, they had him kneeling down blindfolded, and they said, "Now, what are your vows?" And he said, A-E-I-O-U-N-Y, and I just fell over. I'd have lied if they'd have kicked me out.
Chief Bird had a lot to do with build up of the early day of the Order of the Arrow.
Yeah, he sure did. He was
Bird, you know, used to be on our staff. Uh-huh. He was a real Indian. He was from the Cherokee tribe from East Texas.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he was actually a three-quarter Cherokee.
What camp was he at, Billy?
Well, at Camp Lewis Farr. He worked out at the Carlsbad, and he was scout leader out there a long time. And then I believe that it was during Don Baldwin's, when he was scout executive, that he got Bird to go into professional scout. And he lived at Camp Lewis Farr. He was started the ranger there and also served the district.
Well, what were the big activities that y'all remember being held in scouting? Did they ever get all the troops together outside of summer camp?
Well, we
had
the first council circus that I remember was held in the city hall there, indoors. And then the next one, we had a big circus at the old Bobcat Stadium on Pulliam Street.
Yeah.
And Mr. Tankersley, who owned the land where Camp Lewis Farr was, he was the honored guest that night. And there, Bob Carr was council commissioner then, and Bob was in charge of the circus.
By what year was that, J.B.?
Well, I guess along about 38 or 39, somewhere in there. And
but these field meets like they used to have, they used to have muted down there at the fire station. And the guy that was chief of the fire chief, you remember old John Parker?
Yeah.
Used to have, he had always barbecued goats and fed all the kids. But it was about the same stuff like we do now. You know, knot tying, signaling, wall scaling. All the troops in town hated each other. But when Bront came down here and beat our ears down, everybody hated them. And I'll never forget Troop 7.
Negative.
Yes, sir. Troop 7. It all came down to the wall scaling. And Troop 7 and this troop from Bront were tied. Well, most of us, when we'd go over the wall in the convention, you had to have 8 people go over. See, you'd go down and 4 guys would run down and boost 4 little ones up, and 2 would boost 2 more up, and then 1 beast boost 1 up, and 2 on top would lift him over. Well, Troop 7 was always just a little smarter than the rest of us. Bomber Harkin was one of that. They went running down, boosted these first 4 over, and these other 4 stepped back about 2 feet and had track shoes with steel spikes on. They went over that wall like a bunch of squirrels. Everybody stood there with their mouths open. But and since that time, when we used to have wall scaling, it was always put in there that you could not have any spikes.
Well, in 1937, the first National Jamboree, we had a large delegation from here to go. And one of the groups was from Irian, almost complete troop. There were 3 or 4 boys from Ozona in that one. But they all had cowboy uniforms. And I got to go because Mr. Blackburn got sick and couldn't go. And so I was an alternate leader. And I'd never had on those chaps and boots and all that. But anyway, they had me an extra setup, so we all were dressed in cowboy regalia for a different occasion. And I remember going up on the train. Of course, didn't have air conditioning in those days, and we had the windows up, and they burned coal. And man, that soot came back through there, and our uniforms and our skin at the end of the day. And I never will forget when we got to Washington about the second day, the headquarters, Dr. West and them, sent word that they wanted this group from Irian and the Concho Valley Council to welcome Uncle Dan Beard. He was coming in on the train, and they thought that that would really be appealing to him in that this band. All these kids were in the Irian band and the Ozona band, see. We marched to the Pennsylvania station and lined up there, and I never will forget, Uncle Dan came off the train in a white buckskin suit, you know, and this band was lined up, and he walked down, and they struck up the tune, "How Are You Gonna Keep Them Down on the Farm?" And a big grin came across Uncle Dan's face. He had a birthday while we were there at the Jamboree. And I never saw, there was a pie that was twice the size of that tabletop there that they had fixed, a bakery there for him in celebration of his birthday. And we were camped, our particular group was camped out on Haynes Point in the Potomac River. The last day that we were there, they had a formal parade for the scouts. Franklin D. Roosevelt was president. And there was a group camp next to us in Florida, and they brought some little baby alligators up there. Well, one of those scouts from that Florida troop put that in his pocket, that little baby alligator, and when we got over to Pennsylvania Avenue, and it was a full-dress parade, the Diplomatic Corps, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the President and his cabinet, and Uncle Dan Beard and Dr. West were in the Purser, a touring car, sitting up on the back seats, you know, with President Roosevelt. Well, they let the scouts stand right out on the curb, and the people there that lived there in Washington, D.C., and visitors and everything had to stay back of them. Well, when this the presidential car came along about even with this kid from Florida, he wanted him to have the alligator, so he flips this alligator out over towards the president's car, and about that time, a Secret Service man grabbed him by the neck, and they towed him off, and all you could hear going back to camp was, what do you reckon's going to happen to that scout? Well, they took him up to headquarters, Dr. West, the chief scout, in fact, they lectured him. They asked him why he did it. He said, well, I just wanted the president to have a little alligator from Florida. I never will forget Uncle Dan Beard came down in our section one night, and they had a Eagle Court of Honor, and he put on a ceremony, an Indian ceremony that he had gotten actually from an Indian tribe, had the eagle claws and some powder, and they had to sniff it, and he touched them with it, the candidates and all of this. It was quite impressive. And the headquarters was at the Washington Monument. And Graham McNamee, you remember the NBC announcer, he was there. And they had this group of scouts from Marianne and Ozona to give a concert up there on the National Hookup one afternoon.
JB, I was supposed to have gone to the first jamboree in 35 that was canceled because of the national polio epidemic. Yeah. And so I went on in 37, and I had to go as a junior assistant scoutmaster because I was too old to be a scout. But anyway, I went, and Tom Hunter was in my delegation from out of Brownwood. But we went to Fort Worth, and I believe we joined up with the same train that your group went on and went on a train together.
Right.
And
right.
I remember very distinctly the cinders coming in at night and covering us all up during travel that night, and woke up somewhere around St. Louis the next day, and we were just black. But I thought it was ironic that, Tom Hunter and I would end up both in this council as presidents and serve for the many years that we worked together in all of the positions that we did work in.
Well, you know, y'all talking about famous people like Dan Beard and West and some of those. I've heard that we've had famous people come to our council first one place and another. Do y'all remember any of these guys that came here?
Fess Parker, if you call him famous, you know. Of course, he lived here. This was his home.
Well,
you know, people 30 years from now may not know who Fess Parker is.
David Crockett.
On the TV series.
Yeah, right. That's right.
The series and the movie, too.
Well, let's see. Admiral Byrd was here.
Yeah.
And when I was a scout in Dallas, my scoutmaster called me one Saturday morning and said, J.B. said, Paul Seipel, he was the one that was selected, the scout from Erie, Pennsylvania, selected to go with Admiral Byrd on the trip to the South Pole. And by the way, they've got another Antarctic expedition coming up. And there's a boy from Fort Worth, wasn't it, Frank, that's selected to go this next Antarctic?
Yes,
but anyway, we went out to Camp Wisdom. That was the Boy Scout camp for Circle 10 Dallas. And we met Paul Seipel that day. Oh, I was in hog heaven. I was senior patrol leader of the troop, you know. And the scoutmaster took me out there. I tell you, another man that was in our council, that he was the John Stiles. He was the head of the Canadian professional service, and he toured the United States, and he was here in our council. And they have an executive board meeting down there. Raph, you might have been there at the Roswell Hotel. And after the executive board meeting that afternoon, Dr. Stiles talked to the group.
Yeah.
And his wife was with him. They were English. And
very interesting.
Yes. That was in 48.
Well, you know, we've got two guys here we haven't heard a whole lot from, Stu Hawkins and Jack Scudder, and I know they've had some rich history.
Well, these guys are back a little further.
Let's get into the overtime, too. Let's hear what y'all been involved in and what y'all remember in scouting. Come on, Stu, start it off.
The first thing there that comes to my mind is the way that I was actually, I guess you'd say, railroaded into it. My son joined the Cub Scouts when he was on his 8th birthday, and 3 days later I was sitting down at the drugstore drinking coffee. And I said coffee, JT. Drinking coffee, and it's Frank Coke!
Coke!
JT, y'all.
This lady told me I owed her a dollar, and I just gave her a dollar, and then I said, well, what was that for? She said, you're now a comedian on Cub Scout. And I said, that's how I got roped into the scouting program there, which was 21 years ago, or maybe 21 years ago.
Well, what are some of the interesting things that's happened?
Oh, goodness, there have been a lot of them, and some that I had to create myself, but they were pretty interesting. I had a lot of fun. I think one of the things that made an impression on me more than anything else, and when I first started out in scouting, and Raymond was, I know, was involved in this, I went to one of the first board meetings that I ever attended, and I saw people there. In the scouting program, I just thought, you know, it's just the level of the leader of the troop or the pack at that time, but I went to one of the meetings, coffee, and saw the president of one of the banks was there. I don't even remember who it was, but I mean, some of the people here that you don't normally associate, you know, with it there, and this made an impression on me there starting out in the scouting program. There, of course, one of the highlights of my early scout experience was when I first went to summer camp, not knowing anything at all about it, went down there.
Yeah.
Okay. And
I agree.
It was one of those times when we're having four weeks at Sawmire, and that last week we had 52 boys is all we had. They'd had a full week before they tapered off, and we were camped right down by the rifle range down there, and the man in charge of the rifle range down there told us, if you have some time, those boys want to shoot, we'll just let them come up here. And then they gave the metal badges, you know, to the rifle markings. We got back. I carried 21 boys down there. We spent $42 for metal badges alone for those kids. They had a good time shooting down there.
They went Mr. Ladshaw.
Yeah, Mr. Ladshaw. I know he's dying here.
He passed away. Yes,
but he let those kids shoot down there. Of course, then the ammo wasn't too expensive. I've had a lot of interesting experiences.
Well, how did you come to play the unique role that you played in this council? I know since I've been in this council, you've sort of been the guy that gives the award to all that sort of stuff.
I guess it just kind of grows on you. You get started there. I served as table twister and line squad as long. I guess that
gets to be a habit for me.
It's been a habit, you know, obnoxious as I can be about it. But
what are some of the things you've done in that regard?
What do you mean?
That's what I mean.
He's come up with some of the most unique awards that I've ever seen.
You know, you're always presenting an award to somebody that stumped their toe, broke their finger, or
coffee drinking,
I just happened to have one.
Let me tell you something about J.B. Morris now that'll turn you inside out. We were going down to Camp Fawcett one time. It must have been in 63 or 64, and Jim Lane was in the car, and I can't think who else, J.B., and we stopped at El Dorado to see if Eldon Culp wanted to go with us.
I was on that
were
trip,
you in
Raymond.
And we stopped to see Eldon Culp, and Eldon said, well, he guessed he couldn't go right at that particular time. He was busy and couldn't get away. So he said, y'all come in and said, would you like something to drink? And I said, no, we have about run out of time to be on schedule on time down there. He said, well, how about a cold one? And everybody said, yeah, that'd be fine. JB said, that'd be good. So we drove around the back door of the drugstore, and he brought out a six-pack of beer. Of course. And JB says, oh, my goodness, I couldn't drink that beer. So Jim Lane and Jack Scudder and I had to drink it.
You had to?
We had to.
Oh, well,
JB said, oh, my goodness, I couldn't drink that.
You need to get JT to tell you how come that meant to be in existence there, see?
Well, see, I had gone down, you know, for the last campery, gone down. In fact, yeah. I'd made about three trips down to camp setting this compass course. We had two over there, you know, across the road where the over in the boondocks. And I had to go down, and it took 3 or 4 hours to set this thing. And so what I do, so that I didn't have the boards ready that we actually used, but I tied ribbons in the trees so I could sight. And I got over there on Friday, and the campery is going to be on Saturday, and the darn cows had eaten my ribbons. So when I left that afternoon, he came running out with that thing and gave it to me, you know.
What do you think is the funniest thing you've ever done in that respect?
Gosh.
Or some of the funnier things.
Well, that was pretty funny there, but it would have been funnier if I'd have got to present it to him there. I think JD up one time.
I'd like to tell you one of the funniest things that happened to old Stu.
Okay.
We had a camporee out at North Concho Lake. Stu had the closing ceremony. And, of course, it was going to be in the dark the night. He wanted it very impressive. And he had several boys out in old revolutionary costumes. And he laid a long fuse out on the ground that afternoon. The idea was, as the fuse burned up to each boy, then a light flashed on, and the boy made a presentation. Now, this entire ceremony was supposed to take about 5 minutes, you know, as it came along, as the fuse burned, so forth. But he didn't allow for a heavy dew that came just before the closing ceremony. So the ceremony came out to be about a 20-minute ceremony.
Yeah. No, we timed it, but we had just perfect. But man, that motion got into it. We had got these cards in there.
The thing about camperees, old Strack Crawley gave us a big box of suckers one time. J.B. Morris and I were winding up the camperees that night. Had all these boys, about 300 of them, they were in a semicircle out in this open place. We had a pickup back then there. We were up in the back of this pickup, we were all on the ground in back. We thought, well, it'd be a great thing, you know, as we closed this thing, we just throw all these suckers out to these boys. Well, I'll guarantee you, when you see 300 boys coming at you all at once, they crushed us into the pickup and all over that thing. That was quite an experience.
JB and I were talking here a while back about one that happened to him. Camperee at Boys Ranch out here. We were to have the big ceremony that night, and JB had told some of the members of the OA to fix the fire lay, and it looked like it might be wet, damp, and to use a little Boy Scout water around on the thing. They did, except they used gasoline, and everybody was standing there waiting for JB to light the fire, and when he did, it blew up and singed his eyebrows.
Well, I thought I was...
Oh, hell, it broke.
I couldn't back away fast.
No, you were talking about those little award things. It's just something that kind of grew there, and I had a lot of fun at it. I guess the recipients had us too there. I mean, most of them cherish it.
Well, don't you have one special one you always present? What is it? The Cookie,
Cookie Monster Award?
The Cookie Monster Award?
Yeah.
How did that get started?
Well, I just go to the Scout Roundtable there, and people was always, well, you bring the cookies, you know, and it just got to where if I didn't bring the cookies, they act like they were mad at me, so I started bringing the cookies, and then guys coming over to shop over there and drinking coffee and eating cookies over there that we had over there, and it just kind of boomeranged there, and so got to where now I go to a meeting or something up through the sky, I better take the cookies or I'm in the doghouse, so some of the guys that ate the most cookies down through the years got the Cookie Monster Award, you know. It's just another one of those things that kind of...
Not over. It's been a tradition in this council for a long time. You got the Cookie Monster Award. You were in the in group.
Of course, like any award, you don't give everybody one, and a lot of times you should there or some kind of something or other, but it's a lot of fun there. You get some of that crazy stuff fixed up, you know, give somebody.
I think we framed those two one night on this bad thing. I had Mr. Slayton, you remember, DL.
Yeah.
They cut out a bobcat pen out of plyboard this big around.
About 3 feet across.
Yeah, we presented it to you. I forget the occasion.
This cause I made mention to him about I had inducted then 350.
Yeah,
scouts.
That's what it was.
These ceremonies induct scouts, the Cub Scouts, mostly for other packs, you know. I had a ceremony thing I went to, my old pack. 9, I believe it was. I went out there one time and inducted 44 boys one afternoon for them, and had half the parents mad at me. The Cubmaster told me Marvin Adam later on. So those people chewed him out because they didn't put that on for their kids. See, well, the next year I went back and there's 42 of those little rascals there. And I made mention to JB that I'd inducted over 350 there, and he gave me that. I still got it. It's on my den wall right now.